What about the Taft-Hartley Act? Why should Congress do with it? How should it be amended? That is the question. This is America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Host today is the Congress of Industrial Organizations, represented here by Tom Harris. Our other guests, Representative Thurston Morton, Republican of Kentucky, Representative Eugene J. McCarthy, Democrat of Minnesota, and Anthony P. Alfino of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States. Our moderator is David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. Mr. Brinkley.
It must be true that no piece of legislation in years has produced so much debate and so much fundamental disagreement as the Taft-Hartley Act. Since it was passed by the 80th Congress about 2 years ago, it has been defended as vigorously as it has been attacked. It was a prime issue in the political campaign last fall. President Truman promised to work for its repeal. Some members of Congress promised to help him repeal it. Others said they'd fight to keep it on the books. The fight is going on in Congress now, in the House. It's not over yet. So today we're going to hear a discussion of the Taft-Hartley Act and what should be done with it, a discussion by a group of four people who have rather widely differing opinions, as we shall hear. I will start the discussion by calling on each of our four guests for a brief statement telling us how he feels about today's question, how should the Taft-Hartley Act be amended? First of all, Representative McCarthy of Minnesota. Mr. McCarthy?
Mr. Brinkley, I believe that the best approach would have been to have taken up the Lisinski bill. In an approach to labor management legislation, we should, I think, go back to the procedure which was followed in the enactment of the National Labor Relations Act, namely that the objective of the legislation was to regulate the relations between labor and management. The Taft-Hartley Act and the Wood Bill, which is still before the House of Representatives, tries to do any number of other things. We've had arguments in support of the Wood Bill to the effect that it will prevent the loss of our atomic secrets. In other words, they're trying to ensure national security and even international security through the Wood Bill. In addition to that, it legislates to an extreme degree in regard to court procedures. It infringes upon what I consider to be the proper field of the Judiciary Committee. And so the Lisinski Bill, which does restrict itself, now if people want to amend it, it's open to amendment, but it does restrict itself principally to the proper object of labor management relations, namely to regulate the conditions under which collective bargaining shall be carried out, to determine what means can properly be used by labor and management, and then to set up procedures which can be followed in the event that labor and management cannot work out a satisfactory solution by bargaining between themselves.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Harris of the CIO.
The question you ask, how should the Taft-Hartley Act be amended, is an easy one in our judgment to answer. It shouldn't be amended at all, but should be replaced with an entirely different statute along the lines of the Wagner Act. That is essentially what the Thomas Lisinski bill does. We think that should be done because the approach of the Wagner Act to industrial relations was sound, while that of the Taft-Hartley Act is wholly wrong. The ideas behind the Wagner Act were very simple. They were first to permit workers to form strong unions, if they wanted to. Secondly, to require employers to deal with those unions on wages, hours, and so on. The authors of the Wagner Act hoped by these means to promote industrial peace and to raise the living standards of workers, with consequent benefit to the entire community. The idea behind the Taft-Hartley Act is also very simple. It's to weaken unions. The men who wrote the Taft-Hartley Act just didn't believe in labor unions. The Taft-Hartley Act is a composite of all of the anti-union devices which reactionary congressmen were able to think up during the years of the New Deal. When they got into power, briefly as it turned out, in the 80th Congress, they wrote these numerous devices into law. That's the Taft-Hartley law, and it's bad in its entirety and should be stricken from the books.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Alfino of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States.
The present proposals to change the Taft-Hartley law should be examined in the light of the factors which called that law into being in 1947. The Taft-Hartley law was enacted as a result of a widespread public demand for a new federal labor law which would strengthen existing law to make it fairer, more equitable, and in the public interest. Any change in the Taft-Hartley law now should meet the same test, and in my opinion, the Thomas Leszczynski bill does not do so. That bill does very little more than return labor relations to the days of the Wagner Act. If we fail to enact and keep an adequate labor law, the effect will be to throw the subject of industrial relations permanently into the political arena for successive Congresses to revise again and again on purely political grounds. The Wagner Act was written in 1935 to aid worker groups in the exercise of the right to organize and to bargain collectively. The Wagner Act made no attempt to spell out responsibilities for labor unions. Unions have grown tremendously in size and power so that now, and this is the purpose of the Taft-Hartley law, we can strive for equality for both employers and unions with regard to both responsibilities and rights, placing in the forefront the public interest. It is a significant fact that since the enactment of the Taft-Hartley law, unions have continued to grow in size and strength and have continued to exercise vigorously the right to organize and to bargain collectively. And what is more, strikes have been reduced, many abusive practices have been curtailed, and collective bargaining relations have been placed on a sounder and a fairer basis. We should, by all means, seek constantly to improve the Taft-Hartley law. But except insofar as such changes are clearly demonstrated to be in the public interest and meant to preserve the basic principle of equality in both rights and responsibilities for both unions and employers, the existing provisions of the Taft-Hartley law should be retained.
Thank you. Now, Representative Morton of Kentucky.
Mr. Brinkley, you ask what should be done or in what way the Taft-Hartley law should be amended. I say that what is being done is absolutely wrong. It should be amended as any other law of our land is amended, through proper legislative processes. Now, this matter of legislation in the field of labor-management relations is perhaps the most important thing to face the 81st Congress. No one can deny it was a very hot issue in the last campaign. But what happened? I happen to be a member of the House Committee on Education and Labor. As a member of the committee, I have considered in executive session this, the most important piece of legislation which will come before the Congress, exactly 39 minutes. We had no chance to offer amendments to discuss the law or the proposed bill in executive session. A bill was sent to us, it was voted out on strict party lines, and no opportunity was afforded to the members of the committee even to discuss it in committee. Now, where does that bring us? That brings us to the floor of the House, with a technical, involved piece of legislation, which is, of course, open to amendment. But everyone knows, as a matter of practice, that it is impossible to legislate properly in such a highly complex and involved field on the floor of the House. Take such a subject as secondary boycotts or secondary strikes. They are highly involved. Very few members of Congress who are not members of the Labor Committee understand fully the many problems involved. Now, what's happened to our amendments on the floor? We find a paradox there. We are now considering in the House the Wood substitute to the Leszczynski bill. It is open to amendment. We have been offering amendments which should be supported by the champions of labor in the House of Representatives, the so-called champions, because these amendments are liberalizing amendments. They're in favor of they favor the demands of union labor. And yet the champions of labor are standing up and opposing these amendments, deliberately trying to make the Wood bill as hard as they can so as to defeat it. That, to me, isn't the proper approach. I feel is a moral obligation to vote for amendments that I think are right, whether or not I like the basic legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Morton. Now, assuming for a moment that we do agree some kind of amendments should be made to the Taft-Hartley Act, how do we think it should be done? Should we repeal it entirely and go back to the Wagner Act, or should we change the Taft-Hartley Act, or what? Who has an opinion on that?
Well, I should say this, Mr. Brinkley, to start off. I think we should always approach the problem from current law and current situations. If we go back to the Wagner Act, which we're doing, in fact, when we start working on the Lisinski Bill, we go back to a piece of legislation that was adopted in 1935, 14 or 15 years ago. Now, why not start with present law and present conditions and work from there? After all, the situation in the country is different today than it was in 1933 or 35. No one can deny that there was great need for the Wagner Act at the time of its enactment. But in the meantime, union labor has grown from childhood to manhood. We now find ourselves, we who are in Congress, but in the middle of a struggle between two giants, two strong, vociferous giants, management on the one hand, labor on the other, both well organized. Somewhere, we've got to write rules of the game. And it seems to me we are much better equipped to do that by starting with present law and working and under present conditions and working from that standpoint. I know that Mr. McCarthy and Mr. Harris disagree with me on that, but that's my position.
Mr. Alfino,
I'd like to
support
that point of view, too. The Thomas Lisinski bill is so completely different from the Taft-Hartley law that there is no middle ground possible. And if we take a look, a good close look at the Thomas Lisinski bill, we find that it is in essence a return to the Wagner Act. Such regulations as it does contain, for example, those with regard to secondary boycotts and jurisdictional strikes, have been written so as to apply to a very limited number of situations and only after the abuses that are to be regulated have registered their effects. The real indication of what the Thomas Lisinski bill does is to bring back the Wagner Act is the fact that on at least 10 basic issues there is no provision at all, or the provision included restates a policy developed under the Wagner Act by the National Labor Relations Board. The most significant failure is the failure to require unions to bargain in good faith.
Mr. Harris, do you...
I think, to my surprise, I find myself in some agreement with Mr. Alfino. He's quite right that there is no middle ground between the Thomas Lisinski bill and the Taft-Hartley Act. He's right that that is true because the Thomas Lisinski bill goes back to the basic philosophy of the Wagner Act, whereas the Taft-Hartley bill is an involved machine for crushing labor unions. The Wagner Act is a simple, straightforward provision. Its Section 8, which is its basic part, is only a dozen lines long. The Taft-Hartley Act takes up 30 pages of involved legislation, which is far from straightforward, far from honest. Let me illustrate that very simply. The Wagner Act permits the closed shop where a majority of the employees want it. The Taft-Hartley Act says that it permits the union shop. It is always described by its defenders as permitting the union shop. Actually, it does no such thing, for it permits a union to require the discharge of an employee only for refusing to pay his dues to the union. If the union learns that an employee is in the union as a management spy, it can't require that he be fired. It can't require that organizers for a rival union be fired. Now, what sort of a union shop is that? And what sort of security does it give a union? If a few workers engage in a wildcat strike for the purpose of weakening and discrediting the union can't require that they be fired. It can't even require that communists or saboteurs be fired. This union shop is a complete phony. And even this phony shop isn't permitted by the Taft-Hartley Act, except after an equally fishy and peculiar type of election. In this election, the union must get not a majority of the votes cast, but a majority of all eligible votes in the plant. Again, the Taft-Hartley Act provides that the provisions of state laws control if they're more anti-union shop than the federal act. On the other hand, if the state laws are pro-closed shop, they don't apply. New York or Pennsylvania permit a closed shop, but the Taft-Hartley Act knocks out the state law there. On the other hand, some 13 states prohibit even a union shop. The Taft-Hartley Act upholds them. Now, these provisions are long and involved, and that is typical of the way the Taft-Hartley Act deals with a simple issue like the closed shop or a union shop. It's anti-labor, it's crooked, and it's devious. That's why the whole act has to be knocked out instead of amending it.
If I get back to
Mr.
the... first Mr. McCarthy? Question, the procedure that should be followed in the House of Representatives. I think everyone would agree that the Sinski bill is a simpler bill than either the Taft-Hartley Act or the Wood bill, which has been substituted for it. First of all, the Lisinski bill is drawn to the point which I made earlier, namely that it pertains principally to the question of collective bargaining. We accepted, and I don't think this language is still included in the Taft-Hartley Act and in the Wood bill, that the objective of the legislation was to have labor and management bargain on a basis of equality. The text is something to the effect that without equality we cannot expect this to be worked out. Now, if we exclude all other considerations from the bargaining table between labor and management, I don't think there isn't one union in existence today, if we took out this question of public interest and intervention from the public, that could bargain collectively on a basis of equality and come out evenly with management. We take the United Mine Workers, the union which is probably in the strongest position to do so because it has a fund of some $2 million. It would not take management, again excluding public interest, it would not take them more than 2 or 4 weeks to break the United Miners Union. So if we're concerned with equality, and that's what we're supposed to be concerned about, then we should use the Lisinski Bill. The second reason why we should start with the Lisinski Bill is that it pertains to labor-management relations. Both the Taft-Hartley Act and the Wood Bill goes off into any number of other fields. I'm not going to take up the question of injunction because, insofar as the public interest is concerned, necessarily that kind of legislation or that kind of ruling should be attended to. But the Taft-Hartley Act and the Wood Bill make a particular point of dealing with un-American activities. Now, we appropriated considerable money in this session of Congress. We set up a committee on un-American activities. If there is a particular problem in labor unions, or if the question of being a communist or not being a communist is one which should be investigated, I think it ought to be handled through that committee. And we should not have legislation written into a Labor Management Relations Act which says, or which points the finger either at members of the labor union or, as the Wood Bill suggests, points the finger at the members of management. This is legislation which does not pertain to labor management relations, and it should not be dragged in to the consideration of a bill which has that as its purpose. Secondly, the Wood Bill and the Taft-Hartley Bill both attempt to regulate political activity. Now, if the political activities of labor unions are such that they should be very specifically brought under the Corrupt Practices Act, we have a committee which deals with that. Let them look into it and pass legislation, but not bring this in and confuse the argument and cloud the issues in a labor management relations bill. The same thing is true in regard to the internal operation of labor unions. We don't, in this bill, regulate the internal operations of the corporations. We have other legislation to do that. And as was stated on the floor, a committee has been set up under the chairmanship of Mr. Jacobs to investigate the problem of the internal operations and relations within the labor union. So let's have them investigate the problem and bring out legislation and treat it in its proper place, isolated from labor management relations. The same thing is true of the states' rights question. I'd like to make that one more point.
One of the most controversial points, certainly, in the Taft-Hartley Act is the question of the union shop and how it's treated or mistreated, depending on how you look at it. Mr. Harris made the point that the Taft-Hartley Act doesn't quite do what it is said to do by some of its supporters. Would you, Mr. Alfino or Mr. Morton, comment on that?
I'd like to say this in connection with the union shop. In practice, there is a union shop. It is in operation in a great many plants. Now, Mr. Harris has brought up one very good point, that under present law, the union can only demand the discharge of a man for non-payment of dues. I think in that particular instance, and I know that the Republicans are making a distinct effort in the House to amend that feature of the Wood Bill to broaden the area in which a man can be discharged from a union, to include wildcat strikes and the other points that Mr. Harris has covered. So we are making an attempt to amend present law in accordance with his ideas, but there we're being opposed by those who champion labor. Now, as Mr. McCarthy points out, this political activity, and the other points that he's made that shouldn't be handled in this law, there was an investigation by the Congress that did lead to the inclusion of these in the Taft-Hartley bill. Now, what you're in effect saying is let's go back to the Wagner Act and take these features in which the Taft-Hartley bill covers areas that are not within the Wagner Act and pass special legislation for them. Well, of course, that's one approach to it. But after an exhaustive, with 2 million words of testimony and weeks of hearings last year, or 2 years ago, this bill was passed to cover those areas because it was felt that in the public interest and the interest of the individual union member that these regulations were necessary, and it was put in one comprehensive measure. Now, if we want to break it down past 8 or 10 laws, that's another approach to the problem.
Mr. Alfino,
I want to say that if we count those states that have regulated the union shop by requiring employee approval, we find that some 16 states have now in some measure either prohibited or regulated compulsory unionism. And I think that's a highly significant fact. 16 state legislatures have chosen to do this regulation. I'd like to say this, too, that the real evil in compulsory unionism is that it gives control of job opportunities exclusively to the union, resulting in those further evils that attend any kind of monopoly power. It denies to employers access to qualified workers or the right to retain them, putting the distinction between employees not on relative merit, but on union membership and union activity. The other approach which we might take to prevent the abuses that derive from the closed shop would be one that I don't think either feasible or proper, and one which I'm sure Mr. Harris wouldn't like either, namely control of internal union activities in order to ensure that there will be no discrimination or that there will be democratic procedures. As I say, I think this approach is far less proper and sound and feasible, and it returns us to the problem, to the tack taken by the Taft-Hartley law, namely the ban on the closed shop and regulation of union shop where there are abuses that exist.
Mr. Harris, how do you feel about that?
Well, as Mr. Alfino surely knows, the courts, without the aid of legislation, have undertaken to prohibit discrimination in unions, have undertaken to make sure that no union man be discharged from a union without due process. A union is not permitted by the courts to discharge a man without a hearing, without notice of the charges, and without adherence to the provisions of its own constitution. If it does, the courts require his reinstatement. They do that quite often. As to Congressman Morton's statement that genuine union shops are in effect in many places, that is quite true. They're in effect in disregard of the provisions of the Taft-Hartley Act. Nothing could demonstrate more fully the complete unworkability of that act than the fact that it is so widely disregarded. It is disregarded in the coal mines, it is disregarded in the maritime industry, it is disregarded in the longshore industry, particularly in any industry where employment is sporadic. The hiring hall has come to be the recognized way of getting workers, the union-controlled hiring hall. And with employer consent, those provisions have continued in operation despite the Taft-Hartley Act.
One more point
that I would like to make on that. The Taft-Hartley Act did not apply to closed shop or union shop agreements entered into before its passage. And in all of the basic industries, except perhaps coal, in steel, auto, electric, 2-year contracts were signed up in the spring of 47. So that as to those basic industries, the Taft-Hartley Act has not yet come into operation.
Mr. Morton, I believe you said you disagreed with that. Will you tell us why?
Well, I think from practical experience, I can point to situations in which the union shop is working. The union shop is permitted, and it is working in many industries throughout the country. Now, the closed shop is distinct and separate from the union shop, and I think our listeners are familiar with that distinction. And I might say this to Mr. Harris, that another one of the amendments, in fact, an amendment which I intend to offer on Tuesday when this bill comes back, is to permit the hiring hall where it is acceptable to both. All of us that supported the Taft-Hartley law said at the time that undoubtedly further amendments would be necessary. Mr. Roosevelt, when he signed the Wagner Act, said that it would undoubtedly have to be amended, but it became a political sacred cow and went untouched for 15 long years, or 14 years. That is one of the reasons why the passage of the 1947 Act had such an impact, both practical and emotional, in the field of organized labor.
Mr. Alfino?
I'd like to add one more idea, too. Take it from the worker's point of view. Supposing that a worker does not sympathize with a particular union program, he doesn't perhaps sympathize with the principle of compulsory unionism. I'd like to say that his significant opposition to that union program or to the principle of compulsory unionism is limited because his job depends upon what he says or does.
Well, there is one other extremely important, extremely interesting point involved that I think we ought to cover, and we'll have to do it quickly. It involves the national emergency strike and what kind of law, if any, we should have bearing on that. Mr. Morton or Mr. McCarthy, one or the other, can you tell us how you feel about that?
Go ahead, Mr. Mac, McCarthy. I've monopolized too much time.
Well, I'm inclined to favor the proposal which Mr. Jacobs of Indiana, according to the paper this morning, has in mind to make, to set up a procedure in which a proper investigation is made, and within a reasonable period of time, he may vary the time, I'm not sure as to just what that time should be, but the situation should be recognized as potentially dangerous to the health and well-being of the country. An investigation shall be made. And then, following the president's declaration, if he does declare a state of national emergency to exist, the parties involved will have a right to make appeal to the courts and allow them, the court, the possibility of overruling that decision.
Mr. Morton, we don't have much time. What would you say about that?
Of course, I think in that field, present law is fair and is not crippling to unions or the union movement. Mr. McCarthy earlier said that the United Mine Workers couldn't stand a 2 or 4 week strike. Well, they seem to be able to stand a 2 week holiday whenever John L. Lewis decides to call one, and in practice they've struck for longer periods of time than that. And I think the use of the injunction now in the national emergency is very much overemphasized as being a union-breaking weapon. It isn't at all.
Mr. Harris?
The national emergency provisions of the Taft-Hartley Act amount to only one thing. They enable the government, acting for the employer, to enjoin the strike for 80 days.
Acting for the people to enjoin
it. In a period when wages are rising, as they have been in recent years, that means that for approximately 3 months, the employer staves off a wage rise. The provisions contain nothing designed to settle the dispute. The board which is appointed can't even make a recommendation for settling the dispute. And the provisions have not operated to settle disputes. All they've done is help the employer for 90 days.
Mr. Alfino, what do you think should be done about national emergency?
Well, the approach taken in the Thomas Lisinski bill, as far as national emergency regulation is concerned, constitutes actually no more than a pious hope that one of the parties will offer an adequate settlement in fear of adverse public opinion. We've got some experience to show that public opinion alone has very little effect. And under the administration's bill, the president has no express injunctive power. The Taft-Hartley Law gives him the injunctive power to use when public opinion has failed.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you now, Mr. Alfino. I'd like to hear more, but we don't have the time. Before we go, I want to summarize very briefly the four opinions we've heard today. Mr. McCarthy of Minnesota advocates going back to the National Labor Relations Act, repealing Taft-Hartley, going back to the Wagner Act. Mr. Harris of the CIO says today's question on how to amend Taft-Hartley is easy to answer. It should not be amended, he says. It should be replaced entirely, stricken from the books. Mr. Alfino of the Chamber of Commerce says the move to repeal Taft-Hartley should be examined carefully because he is not sure it is in response to public demand. And Mr. Morton of Kentucky says it should be amended only through proper processes, that it has not been adequately discussed in his House Labor Committee. Thank you. Now here's Jack Roney.
This has been America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Speaking today were Representatives Eugene J. McCarthy, Democrat of Minnesota, and Thurston Morton, Republican of Kentucky, Anthony P. Alfino of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, and Tom Harris, speaking for our host, the Congress of Industrial Organizations. Our moderator was David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. Printed copies of today's forum may be had without cost by writing to the CIO, Washington 6, D.C. This program is brought to you by the NBC Network and its independent affiliated stations.